Because I always wanted a G.I. Joe. I always felt like I looked like G.I. Joe. I mean, I don't mean a handsome face and muscular body, but without our pants on, we look exactly.
Oh my God.
You know, I don't want to brag, but I once posed nude for Playgirl magazine. You don't see anything, my thumb was in the way. You know, the great science fiction author Ray Bradbury once said, when you touch a scientist, you touch a child. Just then, Coach Sandusky said, quick, find me a scientist! Boy, am I thirsty. Jews have to announce everything. I think I'll have another sip. It's very cold. Now I'll put the cap back on. I don't want to make it too tight because then it's hard to open. I'm putting it over here. Jews have to make announcements. You can take a Jew and put him in the middle of the desert with no one around for miles. And he'd stand there the whole time going, gee, it's hot. And look at all this sand. Oh, so much sand. Jews have to make announcements, which is why Jews generally don't make good soldiers. We're hiding behind the bushes! We're planning a sneak attack! You know, I were president and I was going to have a war. I'd like to have a war with Canada. Seems like it would be an easy war to win. Everyone's very affable. I feel like you could march your troops into Canada and you go, we're here to destroy your country. Well, let us know if we can be of help. We're gonna rape and kill your wives and children. Oh, that sounds pretty tiring, yeah?
Welcome to a We Talk podcast special. Mo and I had the opportunity, I'm Brett, by the way, to go and see comedy legend Gilbert Gottfried. So we're going to call this one Gilbert Knows Best.
Yeah, we went and watched Gilbert, and then we read his book. So it's a review of his concert show and of his book, essentially, is what we're going to give you here. And I had a hell of a good time. It's an experience watching him live. I'd never seen him live. I had seen his Dirty Jokes DVD before, but I'd never actually seen him himself. But so I knew what I was getting myself into. But, I mean, yes, there's some fresh acts, jokes for me. Not everything's from the Dirty Joke DVD. There's certainly some. But I know for a lot of people, they say, yeah, you've seen him again. But some people say, yeah, I've seen him again, and it's the same act. But I don't care because he's so damn funny. It's just he's funny. And that's the thing about Gilbert for me. It's like he still has the same comedic sense of a 13-year-old boy. But he's really funny, you know?
Well, and the best part is, his jokes are the same from when he was 13.
Yeah, I know. It's like he has the same jokes as when he was 13, definitely. But like I say, I wouldn't say he's a perpetual teenager, but more just he has the sense of humor of a like I say, a 13-year-old boy. But the way it's his delivery, it's his mannerisms, it's the same stuff that turns some people off, but for me, is funny as hell.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the thing is that you need to know when you go into a Gilbert Gottfried show that you're not getting the parrot from Aladdin. You're getting the Dirty Jokes guy. You're getting the Aristocrats guy. You're getting somebody who's going to talk about the Japanese and the typhoon and you know, the tsunami and stuff like that, and you're going to get those kind of jokes, not friendly family fun jokes.
No. And we'll probably get more into that, but yeah, I mean, it does. He opens up with, you know, talking about the, of course, losing his job as the Aflac duck, which paid him so much. And for the comments he made about Japan right after their storm, and he goes on to, you know, and then he what is it? He starts insulting midgets for no reason.
Yeah. You know, he went on to how little he wanted to play here, and then
he was like, yeah, if there's one positive is that he was like, well, at least I won't have to play Canada anymore if I'm, you know, everybody hates me. At least I won't have to come here to Canada. And here I am, and it's hilarious.
And then it's about 10 minutes solid of how much he dislikes midgets.
Yeah, for no reason.
No reason whatsoever.
He likes to punch them, and they pop back up like one of those balloon toys there. And yeah, I mean, again, it's... And he's not serious. Nothing he says means anything, which is why the fact that so many people are offended by what he says is such a... such a surprise to me, you know what I mean?
Well, it's, you know, sure there's the offensive part, you know, but I don't understand, because I would expect people to know going in, but you know,
obviously some don't.
People obviously don't. You're right. And you but that in itself was part of what made my experience at the show that much better, was the fact that people didn't understand what they were getting into.
No, not at all. Well, explain that a little more.
Well, you know, I mean, okay, like, to preface originally, like, the start of the show, the opening comedian that they had, we thought was terrible. I mean, so...
Yeah, I did not think he was very good. But, no. You know, it's just provided by the comedy club there that evening. And
yeah. He was there to open during that show,
and
that's fine.
I didn't think he was good at all.
Yeah. That's just... And we're not going to talk about him, but it's important to note for kind of later on. And so anyways... You know, we're sitting there. We're through the midget love part by Gilbert.
Yeah.
And so I just happen to look up, and I see this couple that's at another table, and they're paying their bill. You know, doesn't completely surprise me. Sure, it's a little early in the show, but you know, so what? They're paying their bill. They just want to get that out of the way. And then they're done paying their bill, and they immediately get up, and they wind up, and they storm out of the comedy club. And I'm like, wow, that was interesting. You know, it just surprised me that you would come to a show and actually pay, like, you know, I mean, it's not a lot of money, but it's more than standard comedy club.
More than a movie ticket, put it that way.
You know, it's not like your regular weekday random comic show. You know, this is a special show. So it surprises me that you come, watch Gilbert for 15 minutes, and then storm out.
And both of you, you're so... And you storm out is the key part there.
Oh, absolutely.
Which means they're just so offended by... And all, like I said, all he's talked about at this point is the Japan and how he got fired. You know, like the jokes... You say jokes, but it's almost more like just... I guess they are jokes. I'm sure he's saying the same things, but just almost comes across more like a stream of consciousness. Like, you know, he's saying, you know, I had no idea when I'm sitting there typing those things on Twitter that the people of Japan in the middle of the storm would stop and look at their computer to see what Gilbert's saying, you know, and things like that. And so, you know, but like you said, and then going on to hating Canada and then beating up midgets and...
well, because, I mean...
Little people to you and me, midgets to him.
So many people, though, are there's so many comedians that are similar in that regard, who are equal opportunity haters. And I don't mean they actually hate the people, but they're just equal opportunity in the way they talk about other things and other people. Like, Joan Rivers is the exact same kind of thing.
Well, she's an insult comedian, right?
Yeah.
Lisa Lampanelli and Don Rickles even is, you know, I mean, maybe he's not quite as... crude, I guess, but he's still definitely the same thing.
And these are people who, they're successful comedians by all standards.
Jeffrey Ross, another one, you know.
But, you know, it's not that there's any, like, one group that they just single out, or any one group that they don't tackle. No. They tackle every group, so...
And again, he does, at no point in time am I watching him thinking, boy, I bet you he really hates midgets. Like, you know?
Yeah. No,
it's a joke. You know, I'm sure he has nothing against the little person at all. And even if he does, whatever. He's just saying it to be funny. He's just being funny. He's just saying it to be funny.
I mean, it's shock value, but, you know, that's fine because you expect
that's
it.
Why I laughed. Not because he's saying it. I laughed because of how long he went on with it.
Yes.
And there was no reason to have these feelings. And he gave no context to it, which actually made it funnier. So I'm like, why would you hate, you know, somebody so much who's clearly done nothing to you or you have no reason to hate? And that's what, you know, to me, that's where the humor lied. But like you say, immediately after, these people had enough and they stormed out.
Oh, yeah. They were ready to go. And then the people that were directly in front of us as well, I found to be amusing. They were a young couple, and the guy, you could tell, he was thinking to himself that he found it funny. You could kind of tell that, but he was getting the cues from his girlfriend that she wasn't amused, wasn't happy, and so he was forcing himself to not laugh. After a while, you know, and then the you know, the head shake, stuff like that. After a while, you could tell that he had pretty much sold himself on Gilbert officially not being funny. So he
self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. So he started totally, like, he wasn't holding anything in at that point. It was just, there was nothing there. And then at the very end of the show, it was great because she, you know, like, she did a little, like, you know, polite clapping. And then he was just like, you know, shaking his head like, I'm not gonna clap for that guy.
Well, at the beginning, you could tell he wanted to laugh his ass off.
Yeah, exactly. But he took his cue from his girlfriend. And you know, I mean, they were obviously a couple who was fairly early on in their relationship. But yeah, I mean,
kind of. You found that out from the first comedian.
Yeah, really, because what had happened was he was talking about the stages of a relationship, you know, and in the regards of at the beginning of your relationship where you are fucking all the time.
Yeah.
And the two of them shared that little, like, tee-hee moment, and so I kind of took that as a visual cue that they're in that early.
So the guy
stage.
Basically didn't want to give that up for Gilbert Gottfried, and I don't blame him for that.
Gilbert Gottfried wouldn't give that up for Gilbert Gottfried.
I think that's hilarious. He's like, I think you're funny, but you know, I want to get laid tonight, so I'm not gonna act like you are.
Things are more important than that, but again, it just struck me as that whole concept of like, wow, you've spent money on this show and you are fully prepared, you're fully into hating it.
And yeah, and you thought you were getting Aladdin or something, or maybe you had them given to you, but most likely, I mean, yeah, even then, would you go unless you know what he is or who he is? And I don't even know where, other than Aladdin, where young people would know Gilbert from. I mean, we'd know him from, because he had a career when we were growing up.
Yeah.
We're 40. But when we're young, I mean, now, I mean, he's not in the same amount of movies and TV shows. Like, he used to show up, like, one of those guys who would just show up, but never had a big role, but he was in freaking everything.
Well, I suppose you could know him from Hollywood Squares, if you ever watched
maybe,
that.
Maybe, but even then, that was a long time ago.
That was, well, and it was the Whoopi Goldberg edition, and really, did anybody watch that?
Yeah, and if they did, why? Well, for him.
Penn and Teller and such, yes.
So. Yeah, exactly. Actually, yeah. And that's one of the things is, and as we get on, like, yeah, his act was very, it made me laugh. And I would watch it a second time, because I, even if I'm not getting new jokes, I know he's funny. And actually, tell you the truth, one of the things that I loved and appreciated, and this is, for some people, I'm sure this would be a negative, like these people, like these young people, you know, I think there was, two, like, in the 70, what do you go, 75 minutes?
Yeah, about that.
Okay, I'd say there was maybe two or three references that were made about things that happened after 1985. And to me, that's even more funny. Because this is what he knows. He doesn't pay attention. He says it. He's not playing to the audience whatsoever. And to me, that's even more funny. So you either get the joke or you don't. But I mean, when he's talking about, you know, Floyd the Barber from Andy Griffith's show, I'm sure these people had no freaking clue.
Yeah. I mean, they may know references to the Andy Griffith show, but I'm sure they've never watched it.
Probably not.
Yeah.
You know, and but he doesn't care. Like, he had a Jerry Sandusky joke. I'm like, wow, that's fairly recent. Like, yeah. That's as topical as he's going to get, which to me, again, was great. So, yeah, I laughed my ass off at the show. And then after the show, we went and we got the book. I mean, he has some of the DVD in the book, $25. And you'll sign it and you get a picture with him. And we took a picture. And I'm sorry, well, I took your picture and it didn't come out quite so clear. But I thought, you know, it did. I'm not familiar with your phone.
But, you know, I think one thing that I want to get out about this is that Gilbert didn't have to go out and sign things.
No.
You know, he doesn't have to give of his time.
He wants to make money.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I've seen other people who don't do meet and greets after the show and stuff like that. And if you really look at it, sure, I mean, the book was a little bit more expensive than it would have been on the shelf. But you do get his autograph. And the fact that he does a picture with you, the fact that he'll shake your hand, I mean, this is still different than a lot of people.
It really is. And you know what? It was very genuine. He was just... You know, because you actually said to him, you said something about the audience.
Yeah. Because I would have actually, like, talked about the people who walked out and stuff, yeah. you know, just to get his reaction. I mean, we were kind of being shuffled through the line pretty quickly.
I'm sure that has happened to him many times, though, at this point. I'm sure he's like, yeah, I always leave, and, you know.
Well, and the thing is, too, is that while we were in line, there was people who were behind us who made a very big deal out of, well, I'm not getting in that line to get that book signed. That show was terrible.
Yes, I know. And people saying the first guy was better.
Well, that was the thing, right?
You know, or we got in the elevator.
We got in the elevator, and this guy behind me had said that, oh, well, yeah, I found the first guy quite funny, but, you know, Gilbert wasn't, Gottfried wasn't very funny at all. And I just turned to him, and I'm, really? Really?
Yeah, and there's a woman, like his wife or somebody, you know, who was just talking about, yeah, I had higher expectations. You know, I just expected more. And I was like, really? Like, what more do you expect? Like, you're an idiot. I'm sorry. You're just an idiot. This is Gilbert Gottfried. This is what he is. You know, this is what he I don't know what more can you expect. He went out there, and for 75 minutes, he doesn't pause to... He doesn't set up punchline joke in the way that, and pause and have the beats and all that stuff. He just keeps talking and rambling and saying funny things. And it's like I say, it comes across like a stream of consciousness type comedy show, and it's hilarious. But if, yeah, I mean,
but it's again, like
don't
going,
you know what you're getting?
It's like going to an Eddie Murphy concert and expecting 75 minutes of him performing his James Brown impression.
Yeah, or the, you know, family-friendly material because he's a Nutty Professor now or something.
Yeah. It's not going to happen, right?
No, exactly. And especially it's not going to happen that he's going to perform a concert.
That's true, too.
But yeah, I mean, yeah. So anyway, so he was really nice, and these people in the elevator had us pissed off. So you said to me, you started reading the book. You're like, yeah, we're gonna do this podcast on it. So read the book real quick. And I did. I read it over the course of 3 days. And what did you think of his book, Rubber Balls and Liquor?
Rubber Balls and Liquor. It gets funnier the more you say it, quite
frankly.
And
again, the perfect example of how it's a 13, because that's funny when you're 13.
Yep.
You know, and
totally is. Although the funniest thing is the concept of balls being a reference to breasts in this case, because that's not, as a general rule, what people associate balls with.
No, he even said that himself in the book. He's like, I've never seen a hot chick walking down the street and go, look at the balls on that one.
Construction workers talking about it.
Yeah. Look at her balls.
Yeah.
They're huge. That's awesome. You know, you never...
I mean, that by itself is also pretty funny.
Yeah, it is. It's hilarious. And it's even funnier when you read it. And I read the book, and I didn't know what I was going to get. And I got the feeling he didn't know what he was going to do with it either, certainly at the beginning. Because he was kind of like starting to tell his life story in order. But then he would jump out of order, and then he'd add things in parenthesis all the time. And he starts to, after a while, it just becomes a story or a book of different stories in no order whatsoever. But he doesn't start that way. So I think he was going to tell his life story, and then he just starts telling what he thinks is the funniest or interesting, most interesting stuff.
Yeah, well, because I think he probably realized that if he was going to tell his life story in order...
He'd have to remember it?
Well, and it would also have to be a significantly longer book that would involve him writing a significant amount more pages.
Yes, yes.
And technically, he was probably only contracted to write about 250 pages.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, he's not going to be confused with James Brown, the hardest working man in show business either.
Nope.
You know.
And he's more than happy to lay claim to the least hardest working man in show business.
Yeah, exactly. He'll admit it, which is, again... So, I mean,
the book.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, the book itself doesn't necessarily have a ton of out and out laughs.
I mean, I had a bunch myself, but
I mean, I enjoyed many, but it's probably not necessarily the comedy book that you would expect.
I had a different experience with it. I mean, I laughed out loud at several things. And several different stories. And by the time he got into that, I did. You know? Because, I mean, I was disappointed at the beginning because it's like, when he's talking about Saturday Night Live, I thought you could have gone on so much more.
Oh, for sure.
You know? And he barely covers it. But then, that again, that's because he gets to the point where he's like, okay, I'm not doing my life story, so... But, I mean, he doesn't talk about the voice and at all and how he developed it or if it's real or not. And, you know, most people suspect it's not real, but he's been doing it for so long now, nobody really knows. And there is apparent video out there of him with his real voice. He doesn't talk about, you know, there's so many things just, like, all of a sudden, he talks about how he does his first couple shows and how he keeps going and realizes that he's now apparently a stand-up comedian. But, yeah, there's no talk about those early days or struggles or anything like that really so much. Like, it's just kind of, it's just random. But I definitely, I mean, there's, like, the story on the set of Problem Child 2, when they decided... there's that one take he had to do over and over. He was making them do over and over.
Yes.
It's hilarious to me. That Hollywood Square story. Hilarious to me. Of course, there's the famous Emmy incident. There was stuff that... It wasn't like... He had jokes on every page. And for most of it, you're just kind of chuckling, like you say. But certain specific stories, when he really went into them in details, like those ones, I was howling, rolling around.
Well, and there's no doubt about that there is a lot of funny in it. I mean, there better be. He's a comedian. And I think, again, it's that question of what you're looking for out of his autobiography in this kind of case.
Yeah.
Is, are you looking for an autobiography? Because if you're looking for Gilbert really getting into the nutty or the nuts and bolts, the nitty-gritty of his life growing up as a comedian and getting to the point that he is now, you ain't going to get that book.
No, which is what I thought it was going to be at the beginning. And then it's like I said, I think he just kind of changed his mind.
And then it's the same thing, though, too.
I am interested in that, but...
Yeah, and I think that if you're looking as well for it being, you know, an out-and-out just comedy book, you're not necessarily going to get that as well either. So it's this hybrid of, you know, my life story, but the highlights told via comedy.
Yeah, that's true. That's probably the best way to put it. And I mean, there's stuff that's left out still, like I say, like funny, like I know there's a story. And then the thing is, like I thought there would be a lot more talk about, like he could have done a whole book probably just on his time on Howard Stern because he was being such a frequent guest. And he's known for going on Howard Stern and during the news with Robin, which should bring up a really serious news story about somebody dying or something like that, making an incredibly inappropriate joke that makes everybody want to hit him. And then, because they're angry at him, that's when he'll make it again and he'll start applying it to other things. And it just continues to be more inappropriate. But at some point, and this is like what we see this with the Aristocrats section, right? It's at some point you can't stop laughing because he won't stop doing it. And it's at this point, it's the idea that anybody would say this is so ridiculous that you can't help but laugh because it gets funny. And that's kind of much of his, and that's much of in stand up too, and it's in the book, and it's everywhere. That's,
well, look at it. Family Guy's been trading off of that kind of element for years now.
It's true. It's true. I haven't watched it for a few years, but
no,
it's true.
But when we did, that was it. Right?
That was it. It's totally true. And he's very much. There's one story that in there that I know from the Howard Stern show as a regular listener that I'm really disappointed isn't in there. And he was playing for, I can't remember if it was Belinda or Carlisle or the Go-Go's, or it might have been Deborah. It might have been Deborah. Debbie Harry, or not Debbie Harry. Debbie Wilson, was it? What was her name? the teen idol one. There was Tiffany, and then there was...
Oh, Gibson? Gibson.
Yeah. Thank you. I think it might have been Debbie Gibson. I can't remember exactly who it was. But they said to him, they came up to him, and he had this... He was on this tour, and this tour was already, like, pre-sold out. He was making a ton of money, right? And he's making all this cash, and he's the opening act, and he's booked for this whole thing, and it's a great gig. And they just say to him, you know, it's a weird thing, but you know, at the time, he's Gilbert Godfrey in the 80s, and, you know, just go out there and just don't work blue. You can't work blue. Don't use any material. Almost the entire audience is mothers and parents with their young daughters, you know, teenage, and even younger. So just work clean. So he goes out there, and the first thing he does, tells a joke with the C word in it. You know, like that's... you know, and then he told another joke with the C word in it. And he told a joke which had the F word in it a few times. And then he comes back to another joke with the C word in it. And, you know, people are booing. People are leaving. And he gets off the stage. And he gets fired, of course. And they're like, we told you not to do that. And he goes, yeah, I know. But they told me not to. You know, he's like, but I know. But it would, to him, it would be so funny to do it when they told him not to. That it's even more like the... He's cheap and he loves money, and everybody knows that about him. You know, he's the Jewish stereotype. He's a walking Jewish stereotype.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But to him, he couldn't help himself because you told him not to do it, and you can't tell this guy not to do something and have him... He's going to always go against it because he can't help himself. He wants that reaction, and he wants that, and he wants to make himself laugh, and he wants that reaction, and he doesn't like being told what to do. And to me, that's like... I was disappointed that wasn't in there.
Yeah. I mean, but that being said, you need to know. I mean, I have zero doubt that Gilbert Gottfried could successfully pull off another book of his life.
Oh, easy. Two or three more. Plus, I have no doubt that he could pull off being funny to 13-year-old kids without dropping the C word.
Yeah. But... Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, he did it with Disney writers. I mean,
yeah, like, exactly.
And I'm sure that he had a hand in some of that as well.
Well, and he even talk about that all the time and talk about showing up on Leno and different things where it's like he doesn't really learn his lines because he feels it'll inhibit his performance. And that's another thing about this book, and he mentions this early. It's like, okay, these are going to be stories, but this may be true or this may not be true. So now you don't know if the story is complete bullshit, completely true, or true but completely embellished to the point where it's no longer true, or it is true, or part. Like, that was one thing that was impossible to follow for me.
Yes. And again, it's another thing that I don't necessarily care about.
I did at first because I was kept on trying to figure out if it was real, and then after a while I just went, forget it. It's just funny.
Yeah, you just have to take, after that, you know, first few chapters, then you just kind of have to get into what the book is doing and what the book is telling you and just roll with it and enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
Because whether it's true or not, it's kind of funny.
It's kind of funny, and that's the point. And the other thing is this, doing this and reading this and preparing for this and seeing him live, I just want more Gilbert. I want now to watch his DVD about Dirty Jokes again. I went on YouTube and I started watching some of his clips on... Oh, there's a clip on YouTube. It's very famous, I think, where he's... I think it's Gilbert Dice Clay or something like that. Or maybe it's Andrew Gilbert or Dice Godfrey or something like that. Whatever. But there's a guy who's like a really meek guy in the Howard Stern studio and like some guest they have on. And he comes in as this character and is like the most inappropriate human ever, trying to just disturb him, but doing the worst, you know, Andrew Dice Clay imitation. It is so incredibly funny. I watched his episode of Celebrity Wife Swap, which Alan Thicke, and they swap wives, and of course you don't know who's coming, and he sees Alan Thicke's wife and he recognizes her because he's, you know, obviously met them before. And first thing, he goes up to her and he goes, oh, I know you. You're a wife of that guy I hate. That guy that fired me from Nick of the Night. You know what? You're going to be my wife for a week. It's all right. We should have sex. You know? And you're just like... It's just, again, it's just inappropriate. And then he starts talking about how he sang... Alan Thicke sings the bad theme song to his own show. I know he used to always walk around practicing it. And he walks around doing his horrible Alan Thicke impression, going, "Hey, I'm Alan Thicke, Thicke of the Night." and walking around and just pissing her off. And the more pissed off she gets, the more he does it, because to him it's funnier the more she gets pissed off. And yeah, his wife is a saint. A lovely woman too, beautiful woman, and incredible. But just what a, again, go watch that YouTube, it's great, it's free.
he's a special man. But again, and I think the number one thing that we learn from everything that we've read and heard is that if you like Gilbert Gottfried, then you need to know what to expect. If you want to watch Gilbert Gottfried, if you want to read him, you need to know what to expect.
You do.
And
the thing is, to guys like you and me, he's hilarious. And if you're somebody who thinks he's creepy, I get that too. I do.
Yeah, yeah.
But just don't, I don't want to hear about it though.
No, if you don't think you're going to like Gilbert Gottfried, chances are good you're not going to like Gilbert Gottfried, so don't even bother.
Yeah. So anyways, that's our Gilbert. Gilbert knows best, man.
That's right. And so as far as I'm concerned, you know, I'm Brett_WeTalk on Twitter. He's Mo_WeTalk.
And most importantly, we're at WeTalkPodcast.com.
That's right.
Or at WeTalkPodcast on Twitter. info@WeTalkPodcast. You can email .com. You can email us there. Or we're on, you know, you find us all over the place with fantasy football and music. And mainly, though, wrestling and comics, to be honest with you. And not comedy comics, comic book comics. But yeah, you can always reach us that way. But at WeTalkPodcast is the Twitter, main Twitter handle of the site. It's official. It's brand new. So we're growing that. And
if you like this, then let us know and we'll do more.
We'll do more of this type of thing if it's something you dig. And other than that, I think we're, what is it we always say? O-U-T?
O-U-T.
You know, I live in New York, and I was there when Hurricane Sandy hit. And I was one of those people who listens to news reports and goes, oh, nothing's gonna happen. And that night I was watching TV, and all through Long Island, Staten Island, Jersey, entire towns were wiped out. It was like a science fiction I was watching. It was like a war. And right as I'm watching this, the TV started to flicker and it went out. And all the lights in my apartment went out. And from outside, all of New York was plunged in a mass blackout. And I was there in utter darkness with my heart pounding. And just then, the Prime Minister of Japan called. And said, "Wah, not so plain, ah, wah!" Oh, you ain't ready now! Now I'd like to do some jokes off my dirty joke DVD. A man goes into a doctor's office. He says, "Doctor, I don't know if my wife has TB or DV." Doctor says, "Drapes around the bed. If she coughs, fuck her." An old man goes to the doctor for an examination. Doctor examines him. He goes, "Old man, I've got terrible news. You've got cancer and you've got Alzheimer's." The old man goes, "Thank God I don't have cancer." An old Jewish man's walking down the road. He finds a lamp. He rubs the lamp. A genie pops out. The genie says, "I shall grant you one wish." The old Jew takes out a crumpled up map. He unfolds the map. He goes, "You see this part of the world? It's called the Middle East. There's been nothing but war and bloodshed there for centuries. I wish for you to finally bring peace to this part of the world." The genie goes, "Even with all my power, I'm helpless. Can I grant you a different wish?" So the old Jew thinks. He goes, "I've been married to the same Jewish girl for over 50 years. Never once has she given me a blowjob. Could you get her once before I die to just give me one blowjob? And the genie goes, can I have another look at that man? A man goes up to his wife. He gets her two aspirins and a glass of water. She says, what's this for? I don't have a headache. He goes, good, let's fuck. A man walks into his son's room. He goes, son, you keep masturbating, you're gonna go blind. The son goes, I'm over here, Dad. A guy gets a call at work. They say, this is the emergency ward. Your wife's been in a terrible car accident. Get here right away. So the man rushes the emergency ward. The doctor comes out. He goes, sir, your wife's been in a horrible car accident. She's going to remain crippled from the neck down for the rest of her life. She'll need 24-hour medical care, of which your insurance company is not going to cover. You're going to have to bathe her and feed her and rub ointment on her bed sores. You're going to have to change her diapers, because she'll have no control over her bladder or her bowels. The man breaks down crying. He goes, oh, this is horrible. And the doctor goes, I'm just fucking with you. She's dead. Three salesmen go to a farmhouse. They say, can you put us up for the night? The farmer goes, well, I've got a nice size bed. If you lie side by side, you can fit in it that way. So the three salesmen lie side by side and go to sleep. Next morning, salesman on the right wakes up and goes, wow, I had a great dream. I dreamt some girl was jerking me off. Then the salesman on the left goes, wow, I dreamt a girl was jerking me off. And then the salesman in the middle goes, and I dreamt I was skiing. A man comes home from work. He goes, honey, honey, I just won the $500 million lottery. Start packing. She says, what should I pack? He goes, I don't care. Just pack me the fuck out. A little boy comes home from school. He goes, Dad, Dad, I got my first blowjob today. The father goes, that's great. How was it? He goes, tasted awful.